And just get happy. You better chase all your cares away. Sing hallelujah, come on, get happy. Get ready for the judgment day. The sun is shining, come on, get happy. The Lord is waiting to take your hand. Shout hallelujah, come on, get happy. We're going to the promised land. We're heading across the river. Wash your sins away in the tide. It's all so peaceful on the other side. Forget your troubles and just get happy. You better chase all your cares away. Shout hallelujah, come on, get happy. Get ready for the judgment day.
Life happens in the blink of an eye. Our days bleed into months, which somehow turn into years faster than we could have ever imagined, only remembered and marked by our unique life experiences, including memorable vacations, birthdays, weddings, the birth of children, and smaller moments that mattered. But what if we could stretch out those years just a little longer to add a few more memories to this life? According to a few centenarians and supercentenarians, you can simply by eating right, working out, and laughing. According to a new infographic that compiled advice from 25 people 100 years old or older, the true secret to a longer life is enjoying it while it lasts. Keep a smile, work hard, sleep, and eat well were also key tips from our respected elders. But laughter proved to be the most essential.
Did you ever find Bugs Bunny attractive when he'd put on a dress and play a girl bunny?
No. No.
Neither did I. I was just asking.
The fuck is this?
Obviously, you're not a golfer.
Where'd you learn to shoot?
Your wife?
Oh, snap!
What in the hell's diversity?
Well, I could be wrong, but I believe diversity is an old, old wooden ship that was used during the Civil War era.
You gonna thank me then?
For what?
Tidying up.
Well, it doesn't look that tidy.
Oh, I had a few beers when I finished.
You might end up dead.
You might end up dead is my middle name.
What about Jane?
I don't know her middle name.
Having a good laugh is not only good for your soul, but it turns out it could lead to a longer life and a better career. I'm Katerina Badzaiki, and in this week's Infinitely Curious program of ERT and the Voice of Greece, we will dive into the art of laughter and the benefits of keeping a smile on our face.
Yes, whatever you do, keep a straight face. Last time it took us 3 days to get him down.
I love to laugh loud and long and clear. I love to laugh. It's getting worse every year. the more I laugh, the more I fill with glee.
You're no help at all.
The more the glee, the more I'm a merrier bee. It's embarrassing. The more I'm a merrier bee.
Some people laugh through their noses, sounding something like this. Dreadful. Some people laugh through their teeth, goodness sakes, hissing and fizzing like snakes. Not at all attractive to my way of thinking.
Some laugh too fast. Some only blast.
One study out of Norway followed more than 50,000 people for 15 years. The study found that those with a sense of humor lived an average of 8 years longer than those without. Experts say that having a healthy sense of humor can help in both business and life as well. Naomi Bagdonas, a business consultant, recently told The Guardian that some people believe this is too serious a time to laugh. But this is when we need humor more than ever. With this global pandemic, the shift to remote working, loneliness and depression rising, many of us have never felt so disconnected. When we laugh with someone, whether through a screen of 2 meters apart, we get this cocktail of hormones that strengthen our emotional bonds in a way that wouldn't otherwise be possible. Studies show it makes us more resilient, creative and resourceful. However, as found, a survey of 1.4 million people in 166 countries around the world, we are laughing far too infrequently. The survey found rates of laughter take a dive after the age of 23, or really at the major inflection point of adulthood after college. And as The Guardian noted, other research backs this notion. One study it pointed to showed that a 4-year-old laughs 300 times a day, while a 40-year-old laughs 300 times every 10 weeks. Why does this laughter clip happen?
He is a writer on a Netflix series. He travels all over the place. I want y'all to give it up for my good guy, Gus Constantelis. Give it up, give it up, give it up, give it up!
What's up, guys? Clap it up for your host! Oh my God, I'm so excited to be here. My name is Gus Constantelis, but I'm Greek, so my real name is Kostadinos Ioannis Kostadelis. That, y'all went so quiet, oh my God. That's my, can you imagine what it was like growing up with a name like that? First day of class, elementary school, my teacher was taking attendance, it just went like this. Fuck. And I was like, that's me. And then people ask me, they're like, what does your name mean in your language? And I'm like, I don't know, dickhead, what does Jennifer mean in your language? Is anyone here named Jennifer? Good, fuck that bitch, we're moving on. My name is Constantinos Constantelis. That's the same fucking name. What the... But my first name starts with a K, Constantinos, and my last name starts with a C, Constantelis. I don't fucking know why, but customer service is the absolute worst with my name because you got to spell the name for them. So this is every customer service call. We need you to verify your name, sir. I go, great, focus. It's K-O-N-S. No, we need your first name first. I'm like, that is my first name. I said, focus, K-O. What's your last name? That's C-O-N-S. Fuck the last name. K-O. And what's your middle name? It's so exotic. Fuck the middle name, K. One time someone tried to steal my identity, I was like, good luck. You return shit at Walmart. I'm done, okay? I'll be Jennifer. I hate this. I'm gay. Anyone else gay? Okay, I'm not gay. Never mind. Jesus Christ. I feel like I'm back in high school all over again. Beat me up. Okay. I am gay. When I came out to my dad, he just said, yeah, no shit. In fact, my dad, Greek immigrant, my dad planned a trip for me and him to go to the Bahamas when I was 16 just so I could come out of the closet to him. I know. It was so sweet. I did not see the signs while I was there. He was trying so hard. Night one, we get to the pool. He starts crying. He goes, I had a very rough childhood growing up in Greece. What about you? And then we got to the hotel room. He started playing Golden Girls. He was like, this is a very good show. Eh? The second night he wanted to go clubbing, the concierge sent me and my dad to a gay bar because he thought my dad was my sugar daddy. So it was a weird fucking night, okay? We walked in, Vogue by Madonna was on. He loved it. He was like, Greta Garbo and Monroe, Dietrich de Andavasio. I didn't come out to my dad. I didn't come out to my dad till 4 years after that trip. But the whole time I was in the Bahamas, I was like, is my dad gay? But I waited a full year to come out to my mom after my dad because my mom's a hater. My mom, you have to understand, my mom is super old school. My mom moved to America 38 years ago. 38 years ago and doesn't speak any English. That's fucking brave, okay? 38 years? Learn a phrase, bitch! Like, the only things my mom knows how to say after 38 years in America are hello, how are you, and fuck you. That's it. We got rear-ended once. This guy hit our car from behind. She gets out of the car, starts yelling at this dude. She was like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, hello. Fuck you. How are you? My mom is an immigrant. She's still on her green card, but she'll be like, "Efti Mexicani, ergo sete tijora, que mas clevun en tus lias," which literally translates to, these damn Mexicans, they come to this country and they steal all our jobs. And I'm like, Mom, you can't even say that in English. What? But I waited a full year to come out to my mom. I waited a full year to come out to my mom. And my dad said, do not tell your mother. It's going to start World War III. Wait for me. I'm going to condition her. And I was like, condition her? So for like a year straight, I swear to God, my dad walked around the house saying things like, you know, gay people, they really do increase the property value when they move to a neighborhood. I went to Home Depot and this very nice lesbian helped me pick out the hammer. And then I did it. I got impatient. I ripped the Band-Aid off. I told my mom. It went horribly. My dad came home and he was like, why? I was so close. And I was like, so close? What does that mean? Next week you were going to watch Brokeback Mountain? Oh, Dad. But growing up with a parent that doesn't speak English, that shit's hard. It's hard because I got to help my mom with everything. To this day, I have to help my mom with everything. And making clothing returns with her was absolutely miserable growing up. Because this is what it's like making a clothing return with a non-English-speaking immigrant parent. You get to the register of Macy's, and my mom is just like, just like, she just wants to return this dress. Like, I don't know, I think a button is missing. And I'm like, I think store credit would be great. And meanwhile, my mom, I am like 6 years old, okay? And my, and I'm like, come on, 6 years old? I swear to God, people my age, like millennials, are like, I'm so stressed out because I have to make a doctor's appointment. Try being 5 years old making doctor's appointments for your mother, okay? I was on the way to kindergarten, like, yes, hello, I'd like to schedule a pap smear.
Gus Kostandelis is a Greek-American comedian who became more known on social media for his take on his relationship with his mom and his self-sarcastic humor on life and relationships as a whole. Gus, hello, and welcome to our Infinitely Curious program.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. This is so exciting.
Now, Gus, indulge my curiosity. How often do you laugh in one day?
You know, it's so funny because I am really not a big laugher. I think, you know what, maybe I'm going to say about 7 to 8 times a day I get a good laugh. And in fact, when my friends can get a really big laugh out of me, they're always like, okay, good. I know that that was funny because Gus laughed. Like, I will watch comedy with my friends, and I'll just look miserable the whole time. And then after it's over, they'll be like, did you like that? And I'll be like, yeah, that was hilarious. I had a great time.
Well, 7-8 times a day is more laughs than I do, actually, to be honest. It's quite good.
Never mind then. Sure.
What makes you laugh, and what usually makes your audience laugh?
So I think what makes me laugh are things that are just really kind of ridiculous, or like everyday things that you see that are like, why is that happening right now? I think is what makes me laugh. Just things that are just over the top and very ridiculous. And I think that that is what I tap into in my comedy, is making fun of everyday things and putting them in an over the top, exaggerated kind of scenario and seeing what happens, or using everyday life things and amplifying them and exaggerating them to make them even funnier because they're relatable with everybody. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that what people find funny about my comedy is that they see parts of my life and they say, I have that in my life too. I have a Greek mom that's exactly like that. My Greek mom does that. My partner does that. My family does that. And all of that is really funny when we can share that.
Tell us a little bit about your mom. I mean, how did this all trigger your passion to become a comedian, or was it the other way around?
It's so funny because my dad is the one that's really into comedy. He loves comedy. He loves stand-up comedy. But my mom is definitely the person who I have taken the sense of humor from. Like, I have her sense of humor, and I tell jokes and stories the same way. And I think that, you know, comedy is also really tapping into trauma sometimes and tapping into things that may be a little bit uncomfortable and finding light and joy in them. And, you know, I think a part of it was like growing up with an immigrant mom, growing up with immigrant parents that moved to America and they have nothing and they're poor. It's like all trauma, but it's about making it funny and it's about finding that joy in all those little things. And I think that my mom has seen that and been like, okay, I think at first she was like, you're making fun of me and you're making, you know, maskanis rezili is what my mom says, which in Greek means like, you're embarrassing us in front of other people. But I think after a while, she started really being like, oh, wow, like all these people are similar and we're all laughing about the same things. And that's beautiful.
Is it important for a comedian to start by not trying to be funny, but rather waiting for the humorous moment to arrive?
Absolutely. I feel like I tell everybody that, like, it's always about just observing and experiencing and seeing, like, this everyday moment, this story. Like, I always tell people, like, if you want to do comedy, if you want to try stand-up comedy, tell the funniest story that you tell to your friends and do that, because that's what's going to really be exciting for you and exciting for them too. Like, it's just about taking those little stories and being like, oh, I didn't realize this was even funny. And then here I am. I'm like, telling it and people are laughing because they're like, oh, I did that too, or oh my God, I can't believe you did that. It always starts from just like experiencing life and not looking for it, because every time I feel like I'm looking for something or I'm staring at my computer trying to write, it's when I'm coming up with the worst stuff. It's when I'm sitting there just kind of experiencing life and hanging out and having fun that I'm like, oh wait, I forgot. This is a really funny story. Here you go, you know?
I mean, listening to you and hearing also about your mom, okay, obviously your mom represents a specific Greek culture. Do you sort of detect differences between Greek and American humor in that respect?
Absolutely, you know, and it's interesting because my mom does not speak English, and I post a lot of her on my Instagram, and I think a lot of Greek Americans that don't speak Greek have found a sort of comfort to her because they can kind of learn Greek or experience that type of Greek culture through their American perspective and tap into that. And then on the other side, it's like the Greeks love her because she's every Greek person. She's every Greek woman, every sassy, bitter kind of old Greek woman that has so much to say and so many opinions about everything. So I think on both ends, she really taps into things that excite people, but American humor and Greek humor is very different. And in terms of stand-up comedy and writing, it's a different structure, like jokes, like if I'm going to be like very professional about it, like joke structure is very different in America than it is in Greece. and like the language, you know, is just different, and the way that people throw away jokes in Greek is very different than in America. Some of the references don't translate. But for me, it's about finding that sweet spot in the middle where people can appreciate Greek culture and find the humor in what I'm doing from an outside perspective, but also insiders looking at it and being like, oh man, this is us and this is really funny.
If you're going to try to be funny, will you also better be ready to apologize if need be?
I get this question a lot, and I have to say that my particular type of humor and the type of comedy doesn't really, I don't have to worry about that because I do mostly storytelling and I do mostly real life stuff. Like, it's like, this is my mom. This is a story that happened to me. This is something that I experienced. So if you want to get angry about that, well, go ahead, but I can't apologize for what my experience was. So I don't really have the issue only because I don't really do that kind of comedy. Like, I really keep it very, like, close to what I have experienced. Mm-hmm. And I think when you do that as a comedian, it helps because, you know, when you're speaking from your own experience, who's going to tell you that your experience is not valid or your experience is not true? And so keeping it as close to you as possible is the best way to avoid people maybe saying that you're wrong or you should get canceled in some way, you know?
Or vexing people, because there is this type of comedy as well where, you know, a lot of comedians, they try to sort of be sarcastic and also sometimes sarcastic with other people too, or not.
Yeah, there's so many people that try to kind of like light a fire with people or try to annoy a certain group or say something about a certain group. And it's like, well, I don't have to do that. That's not what I have to do. And if they want to do that, great. But after a while, that's going to get old, I think.
Mm-hmm. Often comedians are the people who are the most depressed, they say. No?
Yes.
How true is that?
No, absolutely. Robin Williams, so many people. Richard Pryor, so many comedians are, you know, have drug problems.
And I can think of some Greeks, too, to be honest. Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Why do you
think
this is happening?
Well, because as I said before, comedy really comes through trauma and experiencing trauma and using that trauma in order to find joy. And so sometimes it's really easy and sometimes you can, you know, work on yourself and see like, okay, I see how this is funny now. But sometimes, you know, re-experiencing and experiencing those traumatic events in order to find joy in them can sometimes be really hard. And I think that some comedians don't work on themselves in the same way. Like, they don't go to therapy. They don't go to these things to kind of like heal themselves from some of this trauma. And they think the comedy is healing themselves from the trauma, but instead it's kind of eating them alive.
Sigmund Freud summarized it in his theory that laughter releases tension and psychic energy. How psychic are you when you explore laughter while writing a script?
Huh. So what does he mean by psychic energy?
I guess what he means is that we tend to have a certain energy inside us that when we exhale that energy, it's more like psychosis when we are actually laughing. It's not a real thing that's happening, that we try sort of to express ourselves through this psychic sort of feeling. I think he just kind of defines it as a psychic feeling, laughter. But in order to laugh, I guess, and have the psychic feeling, you need also to be able to understand laughter and when you're writing the script and you explore laughter. So when you're actually doing that, you go into the shoes of your audience, right? Is that mm-hmm. how it goes? Or you just think, I'm going to write from my own experiences and I don't care what people think, whether they actually like it or not. I'm just going to do what makes me laugh.
I actually really focus on what makes me laugh instead. Well, not instead, but I do obviously like care about, you know, are people going to find this funny? But I think when I sit down and really write from a place of like, does this make me laugh? Am I laughing? Is this funny to me? Then it's so much easier to be like, oh, that is funny. I can see that that's funny. And if other people don't find it funny, then I think I find comfort in knowing that I did find it funny or I liked it. And I think that that's really important when it comes to art and comedy, is to be like, I like this. I really enjoy what I've put out there. And I think there is a psychic energy to it because sometimes you do really know. There's an instinct to it where you're like, oh, this is going to be great. I already know. And you're right most of the time because it's what you like and it's what you're passionate about.
But there are jokes that may not work.
Oh my God, always, every day. every day I tell my boyfriend a joke and he's like, that's not funny. And it is what it is.
Do you tell your friends or your boyfriend the jokes once you've written them to get his approval, for example? Is that a denominator for you?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's just a good gauge. And I think it's because my friends and my boyfriend know me so well, and they know the type of things that I like to put out there. And I think sometimes they'll see something and be like, you know, this isn't really your style, or this isn't really what you do. I think this would be better if it was closer like this. And it's good because it's not coming from a place of negativity. It's coming from a place of love.
And of course, then you change it, right? Or you try to change what you've written.
100%. 100%.
Is there really a laughter cliff as we get older? And why do you think it happens, if so?
Oh, God, I think it happens because people get really obsessed with obligations and all the things that they need to do and all the things that people have told them to do. And it starts weighing them down because I think a lot of people never ask themselves, is this what I want? Do I want to get married and have kids? Do I want this job? Do I want this or that in my life that my parents wanted for me or that society wants for me? And I think people really get depressed by that. And I think it really weighs down on them as they get older because they need to work on themselves and they need to ask themselves, what do I want out of life? Because it's not bringing you joy. You have to find joy because the world's already hard. Everything sucks out there. There's fires, there's storms, there's global warming, everything's getting hot. And if we can't find joy in what we want out of life, then we're going to stop laughing. And there's no reason for that. We should keep laughing.
Last but not least, Gus, since you're now in Greece and you're seeing all these colors, if you were to pick a color, what color means laugh to you?
Orange. Because I can't really see red or green, so orange is bright and it feels warm.
You have what we call the color deficiency. So orange is your favorite color. That makes you happy when you're actually seeing orange.
Oh, yeah.
It's also the color of the light and the sun as well.
Yes, yes, yes. It's just, it brings a warmthness.
Gus Konstantelis, thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us and have a very nice day and a wonderful holiday in Greece with many, many good laughs, more than 8 times a day.
Thank you so much and thank you for having me.
If Gus Konstantelis uses his sarcastic look on life, other comedians like Greek-American Jack Galifianakis have a more peculiar, twisted sense of humor which can bring celebrities like Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Brad Pitt, Justin Bieber, Natalie Portman, and Keanu Reeves in a very uncomfortable situation, leading us to think how subjective can humor actually be.
We just need to have a word from our sponsor. Okay.
Washington is broken. The truth is, too many politicians are totally controlled by special interests and lobbyists. We're going to make America great again. I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
He approves the message.
Why would you play a commercial for my opponent in the middle of our interview?
He paid me in steaks.
I'd be afraid to eat them if I were you.
It's a good cut of meat. I think it's part of the asshole. Well, this has been a lot of fun, Mrs. Clinton. We should stay in touch. What's the best way to reach you? Email?
You've got me.
It must kind of stink, though, that you can't run, you know, 3 times.
No, actually, I think it's a good idea. If I ran a third time, it'd be sort of like doing a third Hangover movie. Didn't really work out very well, did it?
Do you think people focus maybe too much on your looks and don't even, you know, realize that you're just a shitty actor?
Next question.
You know what I would do if I were president, Mr. President? I would make same-sex divorce illegal. Then see how bad they want it.
I think.
You affectionately refer to your fans as beaners.
No, believers.
Yeah, that makes more sense. Tell me what it was like the first time that you laid eyes on Angelina. Was it like one of those classical love stories, like when, I don't know, when Ross first saw Rachel? You know that show, Friends? Have you seen that?
I like that song.
As secretary, how many words per minute could you type? And how does President Obama like his coffee? Like himself? Weak?
You know, Zach, those are really out-of-date questions. You need to get out more.
What happens if you become pregnant? Are we going to be stuck with Tim Kaine for 9 months? How does this work?
I could send you some pamphlets that might help you understand.
First, you supported Obama's Trans-Pacific Partnership deal, and then you were against it. I think that people deserve to know. Are you down with TPP?
I'm not down with TPP.
No, you're supposed to say, yeah, you know me. Like the hip-hop group.
Don't tell me what to say.
Fine, lose. Country goes to shit.
You shaved your head for V for Vendetta. Mm-hmm. Did you also shave your V for vagina?
You got your start doing theater and independent films.
I did.
And now you're acting in Marvel movies. How good does it feel to sell out? Do you think you play smart characters like Sherlock Holmes because you have one of these, you know, these faces? Let's just get a close-up here. It's a face that can go either way. It can use inductive reasoning to solve mysteries, or it's the type of face that masturbates all day wearing a helmet. It's a fine line. If you didn't have an accent, do you think people would be able to tell that you're not a very good actor?
Yeah, no, I think my accent probably does help. That's true.
No shit, Sherlock. Your superhero character is called Captain Marvel.
Yes.
Well, they really have stopped trying, haven't they? I mean, why don't they just call it Captain Comic Book or Captain We Can't Think of Anything Else?
And what would your superhero name be? Captain Crunch? The Bulk?
Like the Incredible Bulk?
Yes.
Well, all of those you just said are much better than Captain Marvel. I read online that you're very private and declined to answer questions. Do you research your roles?
Yeah.
Have you ever considered researching a character that has taken acting classes?
Right now I'm acting like this is fun. How am I doing?
Sometimes I get a little bit miffed by the types of people that I have to interview come in with an attitude as if they're better than.
I have come in here with no attitude at all. You told me I'm a colonial
bastard.
You're
a colonist.
Yeah. I'm like,
look at your moustache. I mean, you look like a colonist.
Coming from the Yeti, what the fuck?
Yeah, you're calling me a Yeti.
Your face is covered in hair.
Now you're insulting the Greeks.
Get off your fucking trip.
I don't have a trip.
You do. You're saying my facial hair means that I'm a fascist.
I said colonist. You're the one that's saying fascist. If you want to go that way, if you'd rather be called a fascist, fine.
No. Yeah.
If you want to be a fascist, your mustache could be use a little trimming.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? On this side and this side.
Sure,
right here.
Sure.
I'd like to thank my guest, Benedict Cabbage. Benedict Cabbage. Cumberbatch.
Take this off.
Thank you for coming out. Well, I'm not done. Hey. Hey. My guest today is Benedict Cumberbatch. Benefit Lumberjacks.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
That's what it is.
Forget your trouble. Happy day. Come on, get happy. I hear again the skies. All our cares above are clear. Shout hallelujah. So let's sing a song. Come on and happy. Cheer again. Get ready. Happy days are here again.
We know that laughter is a personal affair. When we do actually succeed to laugh, we produce feelings like amusement, happiness, mirth, and joy, build resiliency, and increase creative thinking. We also increase subjective well-being and life satisfaction. Laughter can stimulate many organs. Laughter enhances our intake of oxygen-rich air, stimulates our heart, lungs, and muscles, and increases the endorphins that are released by our brain. It also activates and relieves our stress response. High School Classical Academy student Seth Peace, in his TEDx speech, tells us the science behind laughter in a very simple manner.
Now that's strange. I feel butterflies in my stomach, but I don't remember having any butterflies for lunch. Anyway, here's my TED Talk on gelatology, which actually isn't the science of gelatin, even though Jell-O would be a delicious topic. It's actually the science of laughter, our product trusted by a majority of the population to be the best medicine out there. Here it goes. Okay, so a doctor was walking down a hallway at the hospital when a nurse rushes up. She exclaims, "Doctor, there's a patient on the line, and he says he's invisible." The doctor replies, "Tell him I can't see him today." Did that make you laugh? I hope so, because according to the real doctors at the Heart Foundation, laughing does wonders for your health, including increasing your blood flow, strengthening your immune system, and reducing your stress. It also technically counts as cardio. That's right, lazy people. Just laugh all day and your heart will start pumping while your calories start burning. Sorry, did I say lazy? I meant indolent. That's the medical term, but it also works as an excuse for staying inside and eating burritos. Did you know that laughter even has lasting mental benefits? The Help Guide organization, which is a mental health organization, says that laughing gives you a more positive outlook on life, especially through difficult situations. As a bonus, it gives you a great feeling inside at no extra cost. And you can enjoy these benefits for much longer than the leading brand due to a longer lifespan caused by daily laughter. Our brand has been trusted since 1900 BC, which was when the first joke was told, according to Reuters. Comedy clubs were really boring before then, let me tell you. But laughter isn't just for you. Spread the love, as they say. Laughing is better together. To clarify, you shouldn't laugh at people, but with people. The Help Guide organization also states that you're more likely to laugh when you're around others. It also strengthens your connection to family and friends, and, as you probably know, is very contagious. However, 9 out of 10 doctors actually recommend spreading this disease. But wait, you may say, there's a pandemic out there, and the only social interaction I've had in the past year has been over Zoom. And to that, I say, give up being a social vegan and go meet some new friends. Anyway, back to my point. Laughter can be shared even without being in the same room. An informal study done by Leadership Freak shows that even laughing in a Zoom can cause others in the call to laugh with you, and causes the benefits stated previously. Thanks to you, they just got in their daily cardio. Many people call laughter a universal language. That's what I call Google Translate. But seriously, everyone around the globe can laugh. It unites everyone, regardless of culture, gender, race, ethnicity, social class, religion, age, and even political party, which is not easy to do. Here's a picture from the Wikipedia entry for joke, showing the then president of Russia, Boris Yeltsin, enjoying a joke with former US President Bill Clinton. As you can see, humor can bring entire countries together. So, how do you get this life-changing product? It's easy. Just find something humorous about your everyday life. In the words of Nobel Prize winner Niels Bohr, some things are so serious they can only be joked about. Also, shipping and handling costs may apply. Ask your doctor about laughter today.
And even if you don't ask your doctor about laughter today, Professor of Cognitive Neuroscience Sophie Scott at University College London will tell us why our human brain responds to emotions that turn into happy thoughts and eventually laughter.
Laughter is becoming more and more interesting to me, so it's a very interesting emotion. It seems to have quite a different role from some of the kind of classic emotions that we've studied, like fear and disgust and anger, which are very well recognised and very robust and you find in all human cultures. But you can imagine if I start screaming with fear, you would probably start to feel frightened because whatever is a threat to me is possibly threatening to you. If I start looking disgusted, you might start to think, ooh, I'm not having what she's having, it's bad. Whereas if I start laughing, you're much more likely to start laughing along with me, even if you don't know anything about why I'm laughing. It has quite a social role rather than something to do with there's an aspect of the environment that needs to be reacted to immediately. So its basis really is arising from how humans interact with other humans. And we're finding that it's quite universal. So, as you might imagine, you don't only find laughter in Western Europe. My PhD student, Disa Sota, has been travelling around northern Namibian desert testing really remote groups of people who live as part of the Himba tribe and finding that they recognise laughter from Europeans as well as from other Himba people, and people in Europe will recognise the laughter of the Himba. So it really is a widespread human emotional trait and expression. And you might expect it to be, because humans aren't the only animals that laugh. You find laughter amongst animals, so chimpanzees laugh. Some people have even argued that rats laugh. If you tickle a rat, it will make this noise, and you have to record the noise and slow it right down to actually hear it, but it makes this very particular noise when it's tickled, and it will even make the noise when it sees the rat tickler arriving in their room in the morning, which sounds like a great job. So it's definitely something that's quite an ancient evolutionary heritage. And interestingly, the thing that makes other animals laugh, which is being tickled, is also what you find is the first emergence of laughter for humans. So we first see laughter in human beings in a sort of infants when they're about 6 to 8 weeks old, and they start laughing when they're tickled. And that seems to have this very strong bonding relationship with the parent or caregiver and the baby, because the baby loves being tickled and is laughing back, and then the parents are completely thrilled and starts laughing, and you sort of get this strong emotional interaction going, and very bonding one. And then as you grow up, it becomes sort of elaborated to other widespread situations, so you don't have to be tickled to laugh. And interestingly, when we look at people's brains when they listen to emotional noises made by other people, what we find, as you might imagine, is lots of auditory activation, because if you hear somebody screaming or somebody going, ugh, then you're hearing a complex sound. But we also find activation in the parts of the brain to do with actually producing movements, say of the face, or if you were going to make a sound yourself. So even though people are lying silently in the scanner listening to these sounds, part of their brain is getting ready to produce those sounds. And interestingly, the effects aren't the same for all the emotions. So while you get a little bit of an effect for a sound like disgust, you get an enormous effect for sounds like laughter. So it really does seem to be the case that the behavioural contagion of laughter, people starting to laugh even though they don't really know why they're laughing because other people are laughing, is rooted in the fact that when the human brain hears laughter, it gets ready to laugh, even if people are lying in a scanner, which is probably one of the least amusing things that can happen to you, certainly as part of a psychology experiment. So I think it's interesting in a number of ways. It's interesting right from its evolutionary heritage right through to how it's actually being dealt with by the brain. And something that we're very interested in looking at next is how the brain can tell apart, for example, real laughs from posed laughs, because people are very good at that. And how exactly in this system are you starting to tease that information apart?
One of the finest comedians of our generation is Katerina Vrana. She's an English Greek who performs stand-up comedy in both Greek and English all over the world. Her shows have sold out in Athens, London, and at the Edinburgh Fringe and Melbourne comedy festivals. CNN has included her in its list of female comedians you must see. In 2016, she became very ill in Malaysia during one of her tours, becoming half blind and paralyzed from the waist under. But she became a fine example of how she turned her weakness into one of her greatest strengths, turning her condition into a very humorous act. This is from her TEDx talk in Thessaloniki in 2018.
As you can see, there's a slight difference from 7 years ago. I'm not standing up. I'm now sitting down. I got tired of standing up. Fuck that shit. As you were told, I fell very ill in Malaysia 2 years ago in 2016. And now it's affected my movement, so I can't walk very well. My eyesight, so I can't see very well. And my speech, so I talk like I'm drunk. Actually, do you know what? I talk like I'm drunk, but I'm pretending to be sober. Very slowly and carefully. No, I didn't have anything to drink. I'm fine. I was in Malaysia for shows and with a group of comedians in April 2017. And one day I felt very ill, throwing up, diarrhea, the usual, you know. And I was rushed to hospital because we all thought I had food poisoning. It turns out I didn't have food poisoning. Yay! I was dying. Boo! I had intestinal perforation a hole in my bowels or the asfixiadero. Pick your choice, whatever. And all hell broke loose. When I say hell, I mean shit. All the shit broke loose from that little hole in my bowels. And my whole system got infected and I got septicemia. And then I went into septic shock. Now, 8 out of 10 people who get septic shock die. I'm one of the people who survived. I don't know who the other one is. Thank you. Thank you. I don't think they're as good looking as I am. The doctors in Malaysia acted super quick. And they put me in an artificial coma to save my life and stabilize my condition. They kept me in a coma for 2 weeks. And when they woke me up, I was paralyzed from the neck down. Party! I couldn't even do this. And I didn't have any voice because my lungs were full of fluid. So I had a massive tube. You know the tube at the dentist which sucks out the saliva? A bigger tube that went much deeper. And it came out of my mouth. And over here, there was a little valve so the nurses could take the fluid out of my lungs. And this tube, though it wasn't painful, it stopped my vocal cords from working. So I woke up and I was like, hi guys, where's my voice? And my entire family surrounding my bed said, ha, you can't speak, ha, this is brilliant. And that's when I realized I had the beginnings of a new comedy show. The moment when I was sure was with the nurses in Malaysia. The nurses in Malaysia were amazing. They were super cute and super effective, very quick to react, but they didn't speak English very well. So there was sometimes a lack of communication, which was hilarious. Whenever they heard like my lungs rattling with fluid or they heard me coughing, one of them would run up and say, Katharina, you want me to suck you? Very high level of service. And of course, all I wanted was to reply in the appropriate way that you would in a porn video. Yeah, bitch, suck me now! I didn't. I was very polite. Plus, I had no voice, so. My other favorite moment was in hospital in Greece. I've been to so many hospitals, guys. It's amazing. Hospitals rock. Yay. Kind of. In Greece, after my final operation, where they removed 30 centimeters from my intestine, there's miles of it in there, don't worry, 30 centimeters is nothing. The doctor came up to me and said, you are now ready to perform all bodily actions, and we want you to perform a bowel movement, nenerigithite, as soon as possible. And I was like, oh, it's up to me. It doesn't happen naturally. And they said, no, but just to let you know, because we've removed part of your intestine, until it gets used to it, things will move very fast. And you won't have time to do anything. What we're saying is, Miss Vrana, Kirevrana, you're going to have to learn how to shit yourself. Ah, really? The dream come true. So the time comes, by the way, it's super fast. My doctors were not joking. Please pay attention. This is how fast it is. I think I want to... So after it comes, yes, I shouted myself, let's tick that off the bucket list. And it wasn't as disgusting as I thought it would be, because the bed was full of diapers that were sucking everything up, so it was fine. But when you're paralyzed from the neck down, someone else has to wipe you. Ah. So in come two nurses, a female nurse and male nurse. And I'm like, why is the gentleman here? Yeti. And the female nurse said, Katrina, you're paralyzed from the neck down. In order to wipe you, someone has to move you to the side, hold you there, while I gently stroke your bum. So the male nurse comes, grabs me, holds me like this. I'm like, hey. The female nurse is wiping my ass. And the situation is very hashtag awkward. And then the male nurse says, I've seen all your clips online. I'm a massive fan. You really should choose your moments better. So I said, I think now is the, allow me to introduce my butt and some of my shit. We're now best friends forever. Magic, magic. And since September 2017, I'm in recovery and rehabilitation. I do physio every day. It's so fucking boring. I hate exercise, and now I exercise every day, sometimes twice a day. Thank God my physios are gorgeous. They're very good looking. So I pass the time by sexually harassing them. You know, I'm like, oh, I've got no balance, health. Oh, now hold me. When I'm sitting down, I'm like, oh, what am I holding? I can't see. If I wasn't in a wheelchair, they would have sued me. They're very wonderful, patient men. But living between the UK and Greece, I've noticed there's an amazing lack of awareness when it comes to disability in Greece. It's amazing because in Greece, we're kind of scared of illness, disability, psychological issues. All of these things are kept hidden in the closet, you know, with grandma's wedding dress and a gay uncle or two. And it's astounding. I went to a shopping mall in this little wheelchair, and three separate people bumped into me. They didn't see the wheelchair. Okay, fine, but my hair? They didn't see my hair. Three separate people. Do you know, not one of them said, I'm sorry, or excuse me, or can I have an autograph? I don't know what this country is coming to. But even though it's been tough, like not being able to see sucks balls. I mean, when you're ill, one of the things that are amazing to do is watch TV series and movies. I can't do that. I can't even read the books. I have to listen to audiobooks. Let me tell you that if your favorite book is read by someone whose voice you do not like, it stops being your favorite book. But more or less, I am having a good time. The show I've made out of this experience, which is called Staying Alive, in brackets, I nearly died, you know, is my favorite show so far. The response has been amazing. And if there's one thing I've learned, of course, there's a didactic message in this speech. Pay attention, bitches. If there's one thing I've learned is there's a very old Chinese proverb that says, you are not what happens to you, you are how you deal with it. And that's so true. You want to clap or not? Yes, the Chinese are very wise. We're applauding them. I think you can deal with anything if you have love, respect, and laughter in your life. You have to be able to laugh with yourself, because life is full of shit. I should know. I had most of it. But at the same time, life is full of rainbow unicorns as well. And the unicorns make the shit smell less, and the shit makes the unicorn shine more. And there's a saying, when life gives you lemons, make lemonade. That is one of the worst sayings I have ever heard. I'd like to change it into, when life gives you shit, make manure. In Greek, it sounds amazing. Όταν η ζωή σου δίνει σκατά, κάνε κομπριά. Manure, it's true, manure is amazing. It's a creative force and a force for growth and new stuff. I mean, I've never been more beautiful than now. Don't you know I'm still standing better than I ever did? Looking like a true survivor, feeling like a little kid. And I'm still standing after all this time, picking up the pieces of my life without you on my mind. I'm still standing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm still standing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've never been more beautiful than now, says Katerina Vrana. And I'm adding to that that we are never more beautiful than when we laugh and smile. Those who laugh will never age, and our smile will shape our wrinkles and make our face shine and jolly for the rest of our lives, and our organs stay healthy. I'm Katerina Badzaiki. Join us next Sunday for another of our Infinite Curious programs of Earth and the Voice of Greece. Meanwhile, remember to laugh and smile and turn whatever hardships into positive strength.
Smile, though your heart is aching. Smile, even though it's breaking. When there are clouds in the sky, you'll get by. If you smile through your fear and sorrow, smile and maybe tomorrow you'll see the sun come shining through for you. Light up your face with gladness. Hide every trace of sadness. Although a tear may be ever so near, that's the time you must keep on trying. Smile, what's the use of crying? You'll find that life
is still worthwhile.